My name is Carl Farinwall, as I told you earlier, and our theme at Holden this summer is On Earth as in Heaven. And what we're trying to do this summer is raise the awareness of guests and staff alike of environmental issues and that are things that are people-oriented as well as, you know, across the board with a lot of the things that have been out there for years and years. And what I'd hoped to do today was focus in particular on one part of our responsibility. I call it the triple A approach to caring for the creation. And the three A words that are a part of this. Okay, first of all, I put down attitude, followed by awareness and action. Somebody, you got it.
We're with you.
Okay.
I think we all had action. Very good, Paul.
The triple A approach. What I'm wondering, since this is in not the form of a lecture presentation, but more of a forum, as far as the whole environmental crisis or the environmental issues, you name your favorite one. There are three aspects to dealing with it. Should those be in a different order? Is there any particular one that you see as being more of a priority?
Unless awareness changes attitudes.
Yeah, you need to be aware before you can change attitudes, maybe.
Is there a possibility that awareness would come first, and then that would change attitudes? Okay. Is action...
Or expand, or...
Pardon?
Or expand, you know, obviously they're interchangeable. It's just the thought was that the more people know, I mean, just the whole Earth Day thing, mm-hmm. You know, people I never thought would recycle are recycling.
And yes.
I think awareness helped broaden attitudes, and with that broadened awareness and an increased attitude, or more positive.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
A sociological insight that I got a number of years in graduate school was that very often action comes before the other.
Yeah.
That is true. Right. That can be a way that you don't realize until you're actively involved.
You can act your way into a new way of feeling really better than you could feel your way into a new way of acting.
Well, speaking personally with the Holden's policy on garbage, I think something would have been mentioned briefly on this at orientation, or have you folks been here before?
Yeah.
At Holden. This is where, for me, action has helped to change my attitude in that once you've gone through a whole morning and picked through everybody's garbage in the village and done that, you realize that it forces you to realize you don't just put it in a sack and someone takes it away. And we separate and we recycle, and everything that's not recyclable has to be buried. So
we were encouraged in our orientation to join the garbologist team.
Right.
That would probably be a good thing for everybody.
It is an experience. Yes, it is. Because, again, it's, you know, when we go back home, it is pretty easy to continue on with, you know, depending on how the garbage system is set up in your community, to continue with the way we've always done things. Well, I had put them in this order with attitude, awareness, and action in that particular order because of some things that I had come across in my reading. And I've been a high school science teacher, and things I've been aware of is that the awareness has been there, it seems like, at least for a number of years, and for some reason there's kind of a block there. What I'd like to show you is a video put out by a group of high school students in California that does speak to the whole issue of the attitude. And I do think that youth in particular seem to have a very healthy attitude right up front about environmental issues and taking care of resources, recycling, and it's very obvious in the video. And so I'd like to show that now, and then we'll have a chance to follow up. And students certainly with ideas to change things. In looking back at our three A's, the question I wanted to bring up today was, how long have we been aware of the issues that were brought up in the video? How long have we been aware of the problems that they had talked about? Thinking of them collectively, or thinking of one issue in particular, the ozone, for instance, was mentioned as something that's very much in the news today. How long has the awareness been out there about issues of the environment, ecology?
I would guess 10 years maybe on ozone. That's just out of the air, if you pardon me.
Just out of thin air. Other guesstimates for how about for pollution in general and waste management and recycling and?
Well, that's been around a lot longer.
30 years.
Mm-hmm. Longer. Ever since white man came to the continent.
Okay, and that is why I guess I went back and put attitude before awareness, because if we have known about, if these issues have been around for 10, 20, 30 years, I guess the next question to ask ourselves is, why is the world in the state that it's in at the present time?
I've only been aware of the real issue for 9 months, of the real nature of the issue. And I'm fairly active, involved person. But until I started really penetrating it and reading about it, I was not really aware of it. I mean, there's a difference between knowing, in the 70s we had a great problem with energy, and I actually wrote a program for the country in the 70s. And then I forgot about everything until I got up here in September and began to read about this. Well, I don't know how other people, whether you've really been aware of the fact, of the facts, I wasn't aware of them.
So you mean just since you came to Holden and have had time to, well, speaking for myself, that is true of me also, coming from a small rural state where we still have a dump going in where my parents live on a farm that is an open pit dump that's open to anything and everything and that is not regulated or looked into at all. And that's just now they're talking about maybe that'll have to be closed. So for me also it has been, as far as the action part of it, it has been since May with coming to Holden.
But I think in the late 60s when Rachel Carson wrote Silent Spring, a lot of awareness was raised.
Yes.
But the thing is, it's a lot of attitudes at the top of your list.
Well,
it's a lot of it is attitude. Who cares, there's a lot of place you can put stuff. So, a lot of the people who are putting bad stuff places don't care because it means, they make money if they do it that way.
I had found in the library here in Holden Library, I guess one of the advantages of having a lot of older books around is that they really are eye-openers when you get a hold of one, and particularly one I found on environmental crisis was called The Closing Circle, and it was copyrighted in 1970. And as I'm reading this book and looking at the issues, I was very surprised to find a list that is very much similar to the latest up-to-date stuff on the most important issues facing us in ecology and the environment today were talked about in 1970. Then it was called the best book on ecology ever written. And at the time, 20 years ago, the issues were nuclear weapons, air and water pollution, extinction, deforestation, global warming was mentioned, and into the ozone issue. And that's when it dawned on me that something's wrong if we've lost 20 years. At the time, the reviewers, you know, at the time, people actually referred to it as a crisis, and that the fact that it's been going on 20 years is makes a person wonder. But for the people that reviewed the book, will be difficult to rebut, if indeed it can be rebutted. It certainly can't be ignored. From New York News, from the New York Times, certainly the most sober, rigorous, well-organized statement of what our environmental problems are, how we got them, and what we should do about them. And so here we are 20 years down the road, and picking up a magazine published this year, 20 years later, and we're looking at the same issues. And so that's when I really began to focus in on the attitude end of things, and realize that it does involve a lot more than an awareness, and maybe that is, like Al had mentioned, maybe that does mean that it's something that we really have to dig into before our attitudes do change. Anybody care to comment on your personal experience?
Well, the discouraging things in my personal experience is that I find a number of people that I'm in fairly close association with that can find exceptions to virtually every environmental issue that I know of.
You mean they can argue on the other side of it?
Yeah. You know, not very long ago, Paul Harvey had a line saying something about in the United States the temperature has gone down over the last 50 years, or, you know, in terms of actual measurements. And this, every time, it seems to me that an issue has finally gotten elevated to the point where there becomes a kind of popular awareness, there can become one simple bit of debunking data, and it can go back to business as usual.
Certainly, there's always for every half a dozen studies that you can find one way, if you scrape around enough, you can come up with something that, like you say, that will say the opposite, which means that you don't have to deal with it for a lot of people.
I was quite encouraged by the popularity of Earth Day this year, and that it at least, at last, has become somewhat of a popular thing to do, to be aware of the environment and take at least a little action, personal action, with recycling or something.
Right.
A lot of people at least are thinking a little more. It's not anything major yet, but it seems to be a grassroots sort of popular movement, which, you know, gets me a little
That's bit. Interesting. One of the sponsors of Earth Day was Shackley. You may have noticed Shackley. And I looked in my wastebasket yesterday or the day before, and there were Shackley plastic bottles. Plastic bottles. And that's the only thing.
Was it recyclable plastic, though?
I don't know whether it's recyclable or not.
See, I mean,
they don't have any. You know, they should be producing in reusable bottles that could be shipped back to them, and they ought to have that whole thing set up.
Right.
I think there's two things about Earth Day that come to my mind that you mentioned. One of them is I'm afraid that in our typical cultural way, it's very faddish. An enormous amount of the reaction, you know, it's almost like recycling has become a fad. Ask me 10 years from now how much I think of what happened on Earth Day 1990, because it's really in vogue now, but we are so faddish, you know, it might go the way of hula hoops and a few other things like that. And
it's got to become a way of life instead of
exactly.
Just
the mm-hmm. other thing is, I read around Earth Day time a remarkable review of what all those radical, far out, crazy, nut, all those labels that were put on the public speakers on the issues 20 years ago on the first Earth Day, and how everything they talk about is even worse. They said, you know, we don't do these things, this is really, you know, everybody says, this is crazy stuff, what they were saying just 20 years ago, and everything is worse than, you know, it was a long list, and I don't know where I saw that. But it was just a remarkable, you know, how prophetic they were, and I still don't think people get it.
And it's been 20 years. And that, oddly enough, it was the first time that this whole, well, actually, it used to be Earth Week. Now we've decided that we can do it in a day. It was started in 1970 as Earth Week, and you know, the issues were there, and they were talked about. And
Go ahead.
I think this video is really encouraging because all the kids said that they could do something.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the past 20 years, I think everybody has said, well, you know, I can't do something just by myself, so mm-hmm. why care? But see, there, the young people will turn it around.
So the energy and enthusiasm of youth is very encouraging. When you see
sometimes wasted on them. No. That's a different line.
It's so important to figure out a way to keep up, so this won't be a fad, to keep up this enthusiasm. I think, I'm a teacher, so mm-hmm. I think in terms of getting at the young people, and if you can continue this in the schools as influence, you know, kids go home and they tell their parents, you know, well, we should recycle this paper, we should, you know, not, we should recycle these bottles or whatever. And it could be that there will be a longer lasting effect if we keep at them at the schools.
Well, when they find out that it's easy, then it catches on, like recycling has been made easy by the garbage collectors picking mm-hmm. up maybe, but if anybody has to lower their standard of living or go out of their way or be uncomfortable, then it's not as much fun.
In our city, we have, we don't have recycled, we don't have a recycling program with the city, although they did an experimental one, so we might, but there are several recycling centers that will pay you for your recyclable materials, which is a bit of an incentive.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's not a lot, aluminum, of course, is a lot, but do get paid for plastics and newspaper. And
where is this?
You pay for plastic.
Madison, Wisconsin.
You get paid for plastic?
You get paid for plastic. Mm-hmm. Don't get paid for other paper, like you bring a computer paper. I don't think you get paid for that. Or tin cans. But they recycle it. But you do get paid for glass bottles, too. So, I think, I don't know. I usually don't bother getting in line to so recycle it, but a lot of people do, and if I don't. But still, it's a bit of an incentive to, you know, take it in and get a little money for it. So
sounds interesting. I'm wondering when we'll get to the point where we will take part in recycling and lifestyle changes where there's not economic incentives, and that you know, right now we have our certain key token things that we recycle because of the economics of it. It's, you know, it makes sense to save aluminum, not because it makes sense environmentally, but because you can get a couple dollars for a couple big sacks or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there again, I think, is where, you know, attitude comes in that it's not something that you're doing for yourself. It's something that you're doing globally. For everybody.
I will recycle because of the love of the earth, but right. You can't mm-hmm. expect the general populace to be as idealistic, you know. So, you know, I think you have to get them started with an incentive. And then when they get in the habit, then the probably won't need that anymore. Who knows?
Maybe we need negative economic incentive in the sense that if garbage cans were weighed or something.
They do that some places.
Do they?
I know you're fine in one place if there's any styrofoam in your garbage.
We have a community near us that's doing an experimental styrofoam recycling project. See if it is economically feasible, if they just come out even. So I didn't, you know, that was new, but they have found a way. It's just that expensive to recycle the stuff.
Well, I recycle because it's less carbon dioxide, less warming effect. It takes much less energy to produce our products from recycled material. There's less water, there's less waste, less toxic waste. It costs less. I mean, there are five or six real reasons for recycling that have to do with everybody's future and mine too. And of course the waste, it's varied. So that I just think there are a lot of reasons to recycle.
It's not just recycling, it's also purchasing things in less packaging.
Like that's very true.
And my daughter came home from school with a chart that was really an eye-opener for me. It listed the different ways you can buy soda and what's the cheapest and what's the most expensive. The cheapest way to buy soda is in returnable bottles that you hardly see them. They take up that much space on the shelves compared to all the cans. The most expensive is aluminum cans, which really was surprising. I guess it was almost twice as much, the buying of aluminum cans, as it was in the returnable bottles. I don't buy much soda, so that's why I was so surprised. I'm sure if you buy a lot of soda, you would know that. But why you see so many people buy cans instead of bottles, I don't know.
Because they're light.
Convenience.
Yeah, yes. You have to carry them from the store. You don't wheel them out in the car, so you only have to carry them from the car to the house.
Some European countries now are requiring standard reusable bottles. Anything that's produced has to be produced that uses a bottle kind of thing, or that can has to be a bottle of a certain size that can be used by all the people.
Oh. So you buy your soda, yeah, or buy your beer, or buy your whatever,
right,
and they'd be in the same kind of bottle.
Same kind of bottle.
Well, that's interesting.
There are all kinds of things that can be done, really, really be done.
That's part of what we're trying to do at Holden all summer long, and the focus of this session in particular was not only for practical things, but to work on, to kind of set the stage for that, because the practical things are out there, and we sell them here at Holden, and they're available everywhere. It's just that for some reason, a lot of things don't get implemented.
But it's very hard. I had a woman tell me today she didn't buy a jacket, because I've been saying if you buy anything, you pollute and you help global warming. It takes energy to produce everything, and the production of everything, there are all kinds of waste products. So to buy anything is to aid in a little tiny way global warming. She got the message. But I got for my birthday a t-shirt, a Holden shirt. My wife said, after I was saying this today in the presence of my wife, she said, well, it takes all of us longer sometimes to hear. And I went in, I was thinking of buying a book. It's really hard to buy a book anymore. You're using those trees. Every tree that's chopped down, it's less carbon dioxide taken out of the atmosphere, and global warming has increased. I mean, it's just true. You know, anything that uses paper, I started using a handkerchief instead of Kleenex, or instead of napkins, I don't use napkins anymore. again, it's a little bit of a thing, but it does, it is related. Now, our whole existence is related to warming, almost, to global warming. And when you begin to think of cutting down the global warming, the carbon dioxide production in the United States by 80%, that's 80% of the coal, oil, and gas that's used in this country. You are really attacking the whole system. And we really ought to cut it down. I haven't heard anybody who talks of less than 20% in the short run. Toronto has just introduced a program to cut its carbon dioxide emissions 20% by 93, 40% by 98. Some people are really have assumed, in spite of all the questions, that it's real. That global warming is really real, and there's just all kinds of things you could do, but it really changes what you do.
Well, it amounts to entire lifestyle changes, mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we haven't been willing to do in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do our recycling on the side, you know, while we are a part of the materialism and the consumerism that is very much alive and that's been going strong over the last 20 years. You can't have both, the materialism.
I don't believe we really know that we're liable to get from 5 to 30 degrees warming in the next century. I don't think that's in our, what you call, real knowledge. I don't think we want to know that. I don't want to know that.
No. But we can't. Can we take the chance that it's not
if
true?
That's a fact. that's really what I've concluded from what I've been reading. And I don't read the other side properly enough. But if that's a fact.
What other side is there?
Well, there's just the other side. The warming.
I mean, besides Paul Harvey.
This is part of the other side. If it starts to get warmer, there'll be warmer water evaporated from the oceans. They'll form clouds up there, and the clouds will prevent the sun from coming through. So we won't get more sun, and we won't get more warming. And that's one of the arguments I've read.
What the world will be like Seattle.
And the other argument is that it's going to, and I have a video on it, that it's going to go to the ice age. That the temperature differential between the pole and the equator will cause air motion, and again you'll get the evaporation, and the water will go to the poles, and there will be snow and ice, and we get more and more snow and ice the warmer it gets, and pretty soon the reverse effect will take place. It's another thesis. And I have a whole video on it.
It's hardly less, if not much more reassuring than
it's not reassuring at all. Because it's a different effect. It's a different effect from the same
global cooling.
It's a different effect from the carbon dioxide. But the carbon dioxide is the problem. Well, it's more than carbon dioxide, of course. It's the chlorofluorocarbons and methane. And nitrous oxide too. Carbon dioxide is about 50% of global warming of the greenhouse effect.
So how are we supposed to cut our grass? How do they cut the grass here at Holden?
You don't have to have grass.
Just
you can
let
have other plantings that don't need mowing. Right?
Yeah. Grass you could
have sort of a green desert. You know, it's not even interesting.
A lot of landscaping has gone to rock, crushed rock, and shrubbery, mm-hmm. Those types of things.
Do they have low kind of vines?
Yeah.
Do they have a lawnmower here at Holden?
Oh, sure. We use gasoline
for. Do they have big goats or something? We have deer.
Well, it's certainly not something that changes overnight. But in the last few minutes here, what I'd like to do is kind of trace the evolution of the attitudes. and see where we're at now and where we want to head. Going back, first of all, to the attitude that this whole country was founded on and our industrial society was built on, as far as the attitude towards nature. And a lot of us are still in that mode. What was the original attitude with the white Europeans coming to this country and Europeans in Europe?
Use.
Treasure house waiting to be taken.
Right, right, okay. Okay, right, you go in, you use what you need, you throw away what you don't. Okay, this, it's often been referred to as, you know, we were to have dominion over nature, and Christianity in part has to take responsibility for, for that whole philosophy. And I think in the last maybe 20 years, or we've started to move from here to more of a stewardship role with our attitude.
Would you mean the Christian church, or do you mean
in that, right, as in the, within the Christian church, that we think of the creation as a precious gift of God and something that we need to take care of, and I guess the title of this forum itself, Caring for the Creation, kind of speaks to that. Anything with the stewardship aspects, are there things that we're setting ourselves up for there in our relationship with nature?
Yeah, still put somebody in charge of it.
Right.
Okay.
Right, for some reason.
Sense of oneness.
Okay, that's it, exactly. The whole idea of stewardship is that nature is something that needs to be managed, and that, you know, if we only, you know, can figure everything out, and we'll be able to plug stuff in here and there and keep everything going. And so hopefully we're moving away from the stewardship type of thinking into a theory of interrelationship, where we no longer think of in ecological terms, going back to a simple food pyramid or whatever, and if this were our relationship to nature, we no longer think of ourselves as being at the top of the pyramid, and plants and the quote lower forms of life being at the bottom and us being at the top. And in ecological terms, the animal up there is thought of as top dog, and it's moving completely away from that way of thinking, in that, you know, nature's there and all the species are there for us to use or not use as we see fit, into more of an idea of oneness, that everything's interconnected, and there is we're not in charge of all the other species.
Now, is that what the church is moving to? Because it certainly isn't what the general public.
No.
Okay.
Well, the church is playing a part.
I'd say it's what some ecologists are moving toward. That is, there's a kind of theory of the interrelatedness of the whole biosphere.
Do you think, though, that they are putting themselves lower on the, or not thinking of it as a pyramid?
Well, I've just read a book in which that whole theory is critiqued a little in the light of at least placing the person who can stand over against the whole world and look at it, which is what we can do, on a somewhat different level from the animals. Not completely, but at least recognizes the difference in our responsibility,
mm-hmm.
since we can look at what
right.
we're doing and how it affects the future. We have more responsibility.
Because of our capabilities, then, right. That's
But it does recognize the difference between ordinary ant or amoeba and a person.
Yeah, there's a fine line there, because there still is the hierarchy of, you know, even with the oneness, you know, you still need to decide if there's a tick on your dog, you know, does the tick get it, or do you leave him there? So there's still a hierarchy where we put things in order of priority as far as life forms, but.
But I think of the Native American philosophy of interrelationship and brotherhood of all creatures. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, that I don't know what if the Indian would use it in this example, but if the tick, if he had to remove the tick from the dog, he would apologize to the brother tick.
Right, for, right. Yeah, at
for
least.
Doing that, you know. I mean, there would be a sense of, one, if he needed to use something from nature, he would pray mm-hmm. a first, you know, a prayer of thanks before he took the tree or whatever. That makes a, that's a difference between our attitudes, I think, and that of the Native American, at least in former years. I'm not saying all Native Americans today do that, but.
Well, that was the tradition, right?
And yes. More spiritual people do that. So.
Yes, and that is something that, as the white European people are finally starting to see some sense in, but it's taken a long time. And speaking of time, we are out for today. And what I want to do before you leave is plug our literature that we do have. For the action end of things, we spent pretty much the whole time on attitude and setting you up for the action part. I think you'll find these resources very very straightforward, very practical. These two are available in the bookstore, or if you want to just look, these copies come from the Resource Center just down the hall. There's a separate version for kids, 50 ways, things you can do to save the earth, the adult version and the version for kids, and Shopping for a Better World is something you can pick up in the bookstore also, where they have rated corporations on how they respond to different issues. And there are various other materials also in the Resource Center. Probably the easiest thing to pick up and take home for the cheapest price is Al's version of, you've compiled evidently a lot of different things in. And what he's done, he's taken a lot of different sources and compiled them on, notice he's used both sides of the paper, something that you can pick up for a quarter at the end of the dining hall in the dining room. Or if you don't have a quarter, just take it. But it's something you can take home and things that you can actually do in your homes, with your kids, family projects, or traditions that are started. And we hope for a snowball effect.